I pointed across the moat to the guards slowly walking back and forth atop the nearest of the keep's little towers. All of the towers had guards, but this one was farthest from the front gate and the weakest link in the defense.
That's our first hurdle, right there. We can't get over the outer wall without doing something about him. You can't, anyway. I could probably get past him on my own, but if I'm going to carve a hole big enough for you to follow me through, he's got to either die or take a convenient nap. This is your domain and your mission, so it's your choice as to which.
Which would you recommend under the circumstances?
There are pluses and minuses to both choices. Dead is easier, and it's permanent. There's no chance of the guard waking up and sounding the alarm. It's also not something we'll be able to conceal later. Leave a corpse and they know someone ghosted a guard. Get rid of the body and they'll still be pretty sure that someone killed the guy. Perhaps most importantly, if I do ghost him, there's no bringing him back. Right now, all that we know he's guilty of is working for your sister. Now, he could be every bit as bad as those torturers who had me strung up in Tien, but he could just be a local kid who needs to make a living. We can't know without investigating.
My sister's kept this place even quieter than she did that nasty little dungeon in Tien. Considering the kinds of things that was set up for, and the unholy pursuits my sister has taken a liking to in the last few years, I really doubt that anyone here is an innocent lamb. But you're right that we can't know that without investigating first.
She closed her eyes for a moment, then opened them and straightened her spine.
I'm the rightful Baroness of Marshan. That man over there is one of my people, even if he does work for my sister. He deserves the benefit of the doubt. If you can put him to sleep without too great a risk to yourself, do it. If you can't, if there's any real chance that he'll give us away or harm you, kill him.
Wait here. I'll throw a rope down when I've taken care of him.
I slipped down to the edge of the moat and eyed the water. It looked cold and smelled wrong somehow. Swampy and rank, where it appeared clean and clear. I didn't really want to swim, but the heights of the walls relative to the surrounding trees made for an impossible sail jump. Also, if I swam, I'd be much harder to see coming. So I edged my way out onto a root in order to ease myself into the moat quietly. Dim moonlight cast my shadow on the surface of the water. Triss quickly changed shape and spread dragon wings wide between me and the water.
Back up.
Why?
Faster!
Up on the tower, the guard turned and looked our way, raising his lantern as he did so. I flattened myself in the leaf litter under the trees, and Triss flowed over me, covering me in shadow. Together, we waited for the guard to turn away. Triss finally signaled that the guard had moved back to his normal pattern.
What's wrong?
Something in the water. I don't know what, but when I touched the surface, I could feel things moving around down in the deeps. It tasted like the shadows under the trees. I don't think swimming would be wise.
And I don't think we can make the tower's deck with a sail jump. It's simply too far above the nearer trees.
So we don't jump for the top. There's a little ridge in the bedrock just below the base of the wall, a few inches above the water. If you aim for that, I don't think we'll have any trouble.
Except for the part where I smash face first into the wall and fall into the water if we come in too fast. Oh, and the bit where you have to shift from wings to claws in the instant between hitting the wall and falling into the water.
We've done harder jumps in the past.
We were a lot younger then. And in better training, and you hadn't been recently injured.
Are you saying you're too old and out of shape to manage your end of things? Because I'll understand if you are. I know I can do my part, but I'm sure we can find some other way for an old man like you to get in if we need to.
Listen here, you lizard-brained excuse for a shadow puppet.
Does that sudden silence mean you've decided you're not quite too decrepit to pull off a trick you could have done in your sleep a few years ago? Or, to put a finer point on it, that I'm right, as usual?
Let's just say that we'll make the attempt. The worst that happens is we blow it and die horribly, and my last words will be, "I told you so."
I can live with that.
Why doesn't that surprise me?
Once Triss and I were prepared, I set my sights on the ridge. I ran from a great distance, jumped, and launched myself right over the moat.
Now!
Triss spun the wings just before hitting the Merc, and we sailed smoothly, right up until we hit the wall.
Huh? What?
I managed not to slip off into the water, and Triss kept us hidden in shadow until the guard gave up and went back to his slow march again. Climbing up the tower wasn't much fun. Without Triss's ability to cling to cracks finer than any sheet of paper, I'd have had to swim back across the moat or spend the night balanced on the 3-inch ridge we'd used as our landing point. Add in the need to do things very quietly, and it took close to half an hour to make it up a tiny little 40-foot wall. As I waited under the edge of the parapet for the guard to pass by on his rounds, I reached into my trick bag for the case holding the last of my opium and ephic-packed eggs. What I got when I opened it was a handful of eggshell shards and drug-dusted fingers.
Oh, damn it.
I'd lost the easiest way of dealing with the guard, which meant I had to revisit whether it wouldn't be better simply to ghost him. It was much easier to kill a man silently than it was to knock him out without making a lot of noise or seriously hurting him. Long seconds slid past as I hung there, dithering. The guard had come close again. If he followed his pattern, he would look out over the woods behind me for a count of 5, then turn around and walk to the other side of the tower. 1. Through Triss's unvision, I watched as he leaned out above me, craning his neck and exposing the pale skin under his chin. All I had to do was flick a dagger into my hand, bring my arm up, straighten my legs. He'd die without a sound. 3. So easy to let my reflexes decide for me. I pressed my face into the limestone, drawing its dusty smell deep into my lungs. 5. He started to turn away, but I could still just manage it. And he was gone, stepping back from the edge in the same moment that I did. My hand went up onto the lip of the parapet. I pulled myself up and over. I hit him fast and from behind, wrapping my left arm tight around his neck, cutting off air and blood flow at the same time that I pinned his right arm to his side with my own. I lifted him back off his feet, as Triss wrapped around his legs and his other arm, holding him immobile. It would have been simpler to break his neck. I fought the temptation, keeping the pressure on until he went limp. A gag, bindings at wrists and ankles, a couple of loops of cord tying him tight against the base of the catapult, and done. He still might die. Bound and unconscious people did sometimes. But I had made my own decision, taken the hard road and done what I could to preserve his life within the constraints of my assignment. I signaled Maylene, and she sent Bontrang over to take the end of a rope back to her. We pulled it tight between the nearest tree and one of the crenellations. Then Maylene hand over handed her way up the slightly inclined rope. Maylene peered through a low, barred window in the back of the central keep.
That looks familiar.
All too.
The dimly mage-lit room was a much expanded version of the torture chamber where I'd been held.
Except here she hasn't bothered hiring out an illusion to keep the neighbors from seeing what goes on down there. Maybe you should have killed that guard. He had to know what happens here. As soon as I can get a big enough force together, I'm going to destroy this place.
Why wait?
The sight of the glyph rack and memories of what its twin had done to Triss had my blood burning.
You can't be serious. A keep this size must hold at least 30 of my sister's guards. I know blades are good, but there's just the two of us.
Before I could respond, I felt several drops of cold, rank water fall on my face. Triss slapped my shoulder hard. I caught Maylene around the waist, dragging her with me as I dove to the left.
What are you doing?
Moving!
I started us rolling across the cobbles. Something that smelled like it ought to have been buried a long time ago landed in front of the window where we had been kneeling only a moment before. Chalk one up for those rumors of the night walking dead, and another for Triss's concern about things in the moat. The undead moved fast. The creature rose and threw itself after us within seconds. Because we were already rolling onward, it missed again, this time ending up flat on its belly. I threw Maylene a few yards beyond where the roll had carried us, then flipped back to my feet before it came at me again. I couldn't get my new swords clear of their sheaths in time to prevent the creature's clawing hands from striking me full in the chest. Triss briefly shaped himself into a shadowy breastplate then, or the thing would have torn my heart out. Then I went ass over ears and had to let go of my still-sheathed swords as I turned to fall in a clumsy backward roll. I expected to have to fend off another attack as I came to my feet again, but Maylene entered the fray, scything in with a crouching spin kick that knocked the legs out from under the Risen, or whatever it was. It was hard to get enough of a fix on it in the moonlit courtyard to make more than a guess. Maylene's maneuver finally gave me time to free my swords. As the monster started to push itself to its feet, I stepped in and swung simultaneous cuts from both sides. Instead of shearing neatly through rotted flesh and decaying bone, as I'd expected, it felt more like I'd chopped into wet oak.
Shit.
It wasn't enough, and my sword stuck fast as undead muscles bunched and twisted, pinching tight like a half-sawn branch nipping a saw blade. I had to leave them behind a moment later, as I threw myself backward into another roll when the Risen lunged toward my groin. Lanchang tried to claw the monster's eyes out then, but it batted him aside. Even with my sword stuck deep in its biceps hampering its movement, the thing moved scary fast. Lanchang fluttered weakly back to land on Maylene's shoulder. Then Maylene sent a wave of mage fire that washed over the creature. The flames momentarily filled the narrow courtyard between the keep and the outer wall with light and heat, wiping out my night vision in the process. A horrible smell of burning rotted flesh filled the air. Bits of cracked and blackened skin fell away. But the Risen was far too soggy from its time in the moat to actually catch fire. It turned and lurched toward Maylene. She drew her sword, a slender, double-edged dueling blade of the sort favored by the Zani nobility. She dodged out of the way of the creature's charge as she swung a backhanded cut. Several of its fingers fell to the ground. I needed to get at least one of my swords back. Short and broad, they'd do a much better job on the Risen than Maylene's dueling blade. So I lunged forward, catching hold of the sword sunk in the creature's left arm. Putting one hand on the hilt and the other on the crosspiece, I applied my whole weight, twisting and torquing the blade out and down. The blade bent alarmingly, then came free. I wasn't in a good position for an effective shot with my sword, so I turned side on and kicked the thing full in the chest. A knee to the groin would have been easier and a more effective target on a living man, but I didn't think it would help much here. What I really wanted was to shove it back and away long enough to let me think, so I knocked it onto its bottom. But only at the cost of filthy hands and undead fingers digging painfully at my shin and calf.
Oh, shit!
Triss was there, sheathing my leg in shadow, and I hoped it would be enough to spare me the Risen curse. As the creature clambered back to its feet, Bontrang dove at its head from the side, slapping the creature with his wings, then shearing off before it could make any move to catch him. An instant later, Maylene hit it with more mage fire.
Triss, I need an edge!
I stepped in and swung a double-handed blow right at the base of the thing's neck. It was like hitting a tree trunk. The shock of the impact numbed my hands and nearly sprained my wrists as the sword tried to tear itself free of my grip, but Triss came through. With the essence of the Everdark transforming my sword's edge into a sliver of deadly night, the blade slowed but never quite stopped, plowing through undead flesh and bone to behead the monster. Not that that killed it. The head was still angrily snapping its jaws as it rolled away, while the body kept right on going in a straight line. It would take a long and hot fire or powerful and properly tailored magic to fully destroy the thing. We had time for neither. A crossbow quarrel struck the cobbles near my feet just then. One of the other guards had gotten into firing position.
We have to get undercover!
Maylene had ended up back by the low window into the dungeon, and she turned to it now.
Bontrain, come!
Maylene moved her hands through a quick and intricate pattern that left lines of magical light behind in a beautiful cat's cradle for those that had the eyes to see it. Then she touched the palms of her hands to the two closest bars. Maylene flew back and away from the window as the bars ripped free of their moorings and fell inward. A second quarrel struck the place she'd just been crouching, even as Maylene, who had landed neatly on her feet, started back in my direction.
Go!
I dove to slide headfirst through the gap she'd opened in the bars. Maylene had a satisfied smile on her face as she dropped down beside me. She gave Bontrang an appreciative scritch on the top of the head.
Pretty fancy spell work for such short notice.
Thanks. Bontrang and I practiced, though I wish it took less out of me. I need to sit for a moment.
Gotta check for Risen contamination anyway. Might need the fire cleanse.
That spell's what I'd intended to use when I came to get you out of that dungeon in Tien. But then Devin dropped a net over Bontrang, bopped me on the head, and carried us both off as easily as a couple of sleeping children.
I'm sorry I didn't come after you right then. I wanted to, but I just didn't have anything left to do it with.
I wouldn't have let you if you tried. Arl was overtapped, Maylene, inches from dying.
It's all right. Best thing you could have done, truly. Devin had a bunch of traps laid for you. He really wanted to capture you for something, though he wouldn't say what. And he was furious when you didn't come after him right away. It threw his plans off.
Do you know what those plans were?
No. He ranted a little about how you and Sumi were both making things hard for him, but he wasn't dumb enough to spell anything out for me. Sorry.
By then, we'd both finished checking for cursed wounds, and I noticed how very sad Maylene looked, though I didn't know why. So I reached up to cover her hand with my own. For a moment we sat silently like that. Then she pulled gently away. Before I could do or say anything in response, we were interrupted.
I don't know where they went. That big flash blinded me and they were gone when I could see again.
Just get out of the courtyard, you idiot! Another of the Baroness's pets is on the way in from the moat and you don't want to be there when it arrives.
Oh shit, I...
It's time we got moving again. Too bad we can't put the bars back.
Maylene nodded and followed as I started across the room. In addition to duplicating the equipment of the other torture chamber, this one had a large rack, an iron maiden, and a cauldron full of oil atop a fire grate. And just inside the door, we found a huge red marble tub and a large copper for heating water.
What the hell is that for?
I don't know.
After glancing into the empty hallway beyond the door's narrow barred window, I bent to work on the lock with Triss's help.
Maybe your sister likes to lounge in a hot bath while she watches people having their fingernails pulled out.
I wish I could put it past her, or pretend she wasn't my full sister. But blood madness runs in my family. First my father, then my sister, and lately my uncle. Sometimes I wonder when it will take me.
You seem to be doing all right so far. Got it.
As I started to open the door, something smacked into it from the other side and slammed it back shut.
Triss, you're gonna have to...
A man's face appeared in the door's window, leering evilly through the bars.
Always wondered what it'd be like to see someone ripped to pieces by the pets. Give us a good show, won't you, love?
Watch this.
Maylene slapped her hand against the bars and sent a blast of mage fire through the narrow opening.
Another one of those things just came in through the window.
The way the man fell away gave me an idea for the Risen.
Follow my lead!
The monster met me halfway. It came charging forward in the same eager but uncoordinated manner as its predecessor. That was just what I'd hoped for. As its bony hands reached for my chest, I caught it by the wrists. Dropping onto my back and pulling, it lost its balance, falling toward me, and I planted both feet in its stomach, lifting and thrusting, so that it passed over me and went sailing through the air. It landed head first in the big cauldron. For a moment, only its lower legs stuck out above the surface.
Maylene!
She had already anticipated my request, blasting the oil-filled cauldron with mage fire. Trails of fire radiated out around the cauldron from the risen spattered oil. Burning undead hands rose from beneath the oil surface and clutched at the edge of the cauldron. Maylene grabbed a heavy cleaver from a nearby table and brought it down, severing the thing's left hand. Unbalanced, the risen fell back into the flaming oil. When it tried to get out again a moment later, Maylene removed the right hand as well. The burning hands started to crawl away. Since I wanted a closer look, I skewered the crawling hands on the end of one of my swords. This risen seemed further gone than its predecessor. What little flesh was left on its bones stretched out in narrow ribbons of muscle and tendon. The fingernails were gone completely, though it looked like someone had filed the finger bones themselves to ragged points. It was harder to get a fix on the thing's head, as we didn't dare let it get out of the cauldron, but in the brief moments it was above the surface, it too seemed more stripped down and skull-like. After a couple of minutes of our shoving it repeatedly back into the fire, the body seemed to lose the coordination necessary to make a serious attempt at escaping the cauldron. That was right about the time a badly aimed crossbow quarrel came sailing in through the window of the inner door. Maylene sent a burst of mage fire at the door. I would have liked to let the risen cook a bit longer, but the guards had just become the bigger threat, so I slid my swords under the edge of the cauldron and levered it over. A cascade of burning oil washed across the floor, quickly lighting the door and every bit of wood near it on fire. Since that included a couple of major support posts, I figured it would make for a hell of a distraction. I hated to use fire under most circumstances, but I figured the people guarding this chamber of horrors had earned it. Rather than attempt the rapidly growing inferno around the door, we reversed course and went back out the window. The smoke poured out of all the lower windows, and nobody noticed us at first. We made it back to the rope we'd left on our way in and most of the way up the wall before the first crossbow was fired our way. Maylene dropped down on the roof of the little tower.
Do you think there are any more of those risen in the moat?
Why?
Because if we stay here, someone's going to think to use one of the catapults on the other towers to lob something a lot more lethal than a few quarrels at us. And if we try to climb down that line I crawled up, we'll be easy targets. I guess there's only one way to find out.
She vaulted over the parapet.
Crazy woman.
But you're going after her, aren't you?
Of course I am. What if there are more risen? She'll need help.
I followed Maylene over the parapet and into the water.
I can't taste them in the water anymore. I think we're clear.
Maylene was already out of the water when I reached the shore, and she offered me a hand up.
That was insane. You do know that, right?
A little, maybe.
She grinned, and her teeth shone white in the darkness.
But then, so's this.
She stepped in very close and put her arms around my neck.
Don't you think?
I don't know. Seems like a great idea to me. But I thought the future Baroness wasn't supposed to do things like that.
I'm sorry about that, but... Well, I'm not supposed to be doing things like this. Hayan would tear his hair out if he could see us here, but I'm not going to worry about that right now, if you won't. Just for tonight, I'm going back to being the rover I spent most of my life as, and letting the future Baroness take a well-earned break. We could easily have been killed back there, and confronting my sister's going to be even more dangerous. So the chances are pretty good I'm going to die rather than become a Baroness anyway, aren't they?
I nodded because she was right, though it hurt me to acknowledge it. I was quite certain I could kill Maylene's sister if I needed to. Getting Maylene into position to do it herself, after sending a formal warning to Sumi that she was coming and when? Not so much. For that matter, even if I got her there safely, Sumi might simply turn out to be the better swordswoman.
If I don't die, I'm going to have plenty of time to wear the shackles of baronial etiquette later on. So, right here, right now, I intend to do something just because I want to do it, not because I'm supposed to do it. Maybe for the last time.
What about the keep?
I glanced over my shoulder to the place where flames were starting to crawl up the side of the keep. Maylene nipped my earlobe.
The way it's going up, it'll just add to the afterglow.
Crazy woman.
Uh-huh. Does that mean you're turning me down?
No. But let's get a little farther away first.
Fair enough.
When we'd put some distance between us and the fire, I pulled Maylene in under the shadow of a pine and gave her a kiss. She returned it in a way that left me breathless.
It's been an awfully long time for me. More than 5 years.
Me too. Since I returned to Zaan, actually. All right for the future Baroness, perhaps, but not easy for the rover I used to be. Oh, how I've missed this.
She drew her fingers across the base of her belly then, setting the simple spell that prevented pregnancy. A wasted effort, that, since I had long since chosen to give up my ability to have children. Most of the Blades of Namra did so rather than run the risk of creating divided loyalties. A worried-looking Hayan was waiting in the woods across the river when we turned up some time later.
I thought you said you were only going to take a quiet look around.
He pointed accusingly back the way we'd just come, to where a huge column of smoke stretched toward the moon, and flames were pouring out of what remained of the keep's upper stories.
Things got complicated.
Well, tell me about it.
So we did, or most of it at least.
You're damned lucky there weren't any more of those things in the moat, Maylene. What madness possesses you that you do such damn fool things?
Arl keeps calling me a crazy woman. Does that answer work for you? If not, call it a calculated risk. I figured if there were more, they'd have shown up by then.
What were they, anyway? I thought the Risen were supposed to be slow, shambling sorts of creatures. The thing you described sounds more like what you'd get if you could somehow hype a ghoul up on Karras dust.
As far as the way they moved, yes, but they definitely weren't ghouls. No fangs and no real claws, for starters. Just ragged nails on the one that still had the flesh to hold them. They were stronger and tougher than ghouls, too. No, they were Risen, all right. But someone had done something special with them. I want to say I've heard or read something like it somewhere before, but I can't pin down when or where.
Speaking of pinned down, we should be going. That fire's likely to draw the attention of any patrols that Sumi has out in the area, and I'd rather not run into one of them.
Two weeks had passed since the destruction of the keep. The fire had burned it to the foundations, robbing us of any opportunity for learning anything further from the site. We still hadn't settled on the details for a plan to get Maylene through to her sister for a duel, though we had the broad outlines down. It pretty much had to happen at Marchand House in Tien. We were sitting in Exile House's formal dining room, going over a map of the Sauvin Hill for about the 47th time, when a young woman ran in and knelt before Maylene's chair.
Baroness Marchand!
What is it?
A carrier pigeon just came in with a spell-sealed message for you.
Maylene took the tiny scrap of paper and started reading. Within moments, her expression turned dark.
What is it?
Oh, Hayen. It's from our friend in Sumi's household. My sister is going to move to have me impeached before the king. She's planning on using the loss of the keep we torched as cause to have me declared outlaw, though how she can prove I had anything to do with that, I don't know. This says she will bring the charges when the king next holds formal court in 5 days' time. If she succeeds, I will no longer be able to issue challenge. We have to move now before that can happen.
I'll draft the letter for you. When should I say you will be coming for her?
Above and ahead of us on the Temple of Athera, one of the elite hunkered down on the lee side of the bell tower, resting his forehead against the shoulder of the stone dog staring off to the northwest. The dog stood atop a thick limestone buttress that made for one of the few rooftop positions that could both support its weight and provide a way for it to get up there. Between the night and the rain, it had been nearly invisible to normal eyes. But in mage sight, the glow of the elite's many active spells illuminated them from within.
Oh, that's the third roadblock we've run into in the hour since sundown, and that smells bad. One member of the elite blocking a chimney road route up onto the Sauvin Hill could easily be there on some business unrelated to ours. Maybe even two. But make it three, and add in the crown guards who are crawling all over the fricking place, and it means that the king or someone close to him is trying to cordon off the area. Now, there might be some reason for that other than your challenge tomorrow morning, but I'm having trouble believing in that much coincidence.
It's no coincidence, I'm sure of it. My sister seems to have enlisted Crown support.
I thought the Crown was specifically forbidden from interfering in this sort of challenge. That your sister could only use her own resources.
Against me, yes. Against an unidentified renegade blade, or depending on what she's told them, Arl the Kingslayer, I don't think she'd have any trouble enlisting Crown support in that case. Hell, if she's really got Deem in her pocket, she might not even need to talk to Uncle Thothic.
When did you come up with all that?
A few minutes ago, as we were climbing back down the third wall that we'd just climbed up.
Triss spread himself out to keep an eye on things as we ducked into the deeper dark.
That's a major problem. We can't do a big sail jump with Maylene riding along. That, plus all the royal attention, severely limits our number of possible routes up the hill.
So you two can't get to Marchand House with me, and I can't get into Marchand House without you. Basically, we're dead in the water.
There's got to be some way around this. Maybe we can split up and meet on the hill somewhere. If we didn't have to cover you, Triss and I could get past the cordon easily enough. If the Crown's really not allowed to interfere with your challenge, you should be able to pass through without any problems, right?
In theory, but I've got a nasty feeling it's not going to work that way in practice. You're right about this whole thing stinking. I don't know whether that's because Thothic has decided to support my sister's claim against me as actively as he dares, or if it's just anti-mage prejudice. Either way, I'm afraid there'll be trouble with the guards.
I'd love to say something reassuring at this point, but I suspect you're right. The question is, do we try it anyway? Or if we do, then how do we do it without blowing the whole game if you turn out to be right?
Well, there are a couple of crown guards coming along the street at the far end of the alley. I can see their lantern. How about we have Maylene step out that way and see what they do when they spot her? We should be far enough from the elite there to keep things quiet if we have to take them down.
Maylene?
Let's do it.
As we hurried toward the farther street, we put together our basic plan. When we reached the end of the alley, Maylene set Bontrang on my shoulder and touched his forehead lightly, giving him mental orders. Then Maylene stepped out into the street and turned away from the oncoming guards without ever looking their way, heading toward the hill. I pulled Triss around me and stayed in the shadows, waiting for the guards to go past. The pair were tall and professional, the picture of crack troopers and much of a size, though the woman didn't have quite the same breadth of shoulder. After they went by, I launched Bontrang into the air and slipped in behind them. Maylene, who'd been walking slowly to start with, slowed even more as she approached the intersection ahead, as though unsure about where she was.
My lady, could you answer a few questions for us?
Maylene had put on an elaborate and expensive dueling blade that had belonged to her mother. It marked her as a member of the high nobility, as did the rich silk of the clothes she'd chosen to wear. Now she played the part as well, turning to give the soldier a sharp, annoyed look.
Why? What do you want to know?
We're looking for a serious criminal. One of those Namor occultists that the true gods proscribed a few years ago. The assassins.
I thought the blades were all supposed to be dead.
We're working on it, but there are a few of them left around, and one of them's in the area right now.
He had more to say, but I stopped listening as his partner's actions suddenly drew my full attention. She'd very quietly opened her pouch, using her partner and the wet darkness to hide her movement from Maylene. As she reached inside the pouch, I decided I had to take a risk, and so, hoping there were no mages about to see me, I summoned a charge of mage lightning, focusing it in my right hand. She pulled out a small piece of paper with a line drawing of Maylene and a tiny, dimly glowing rune on it. I didn't know what the rune was for, but I knew I couldn't let her activate it. I extended the shadow that surrounded me to touch the back of her neck and released the lightning with a brilliant flare. She went down in a heap, dead or unconscious. Her partner whirled around in surprise at the flash, half drawing his sword. I summoned a second charge and touched his chest. He went down too, dropping the lantern. Then I released Triss and knelt to check the nearer guard's pulse. Maylene kicked the light from the lantern into a nearby sewer grate where it vanished, plunging us back into near total darkness. No one opened any shutters to see what was going on, so I had to assume that we'd been quiet and fast enough to avoid any attention.
I take it that they were about to cause us some trouble?
I nodded. The man was unconscious, but not dead. The woman's pulse showed she was out, but not gone too. A pleasant surprise. I'd expected to kill at least one of them. It probably had something to do with the rain and the wet street. I'd noticed that that seemed to drain off some of the strength of lightning magic, dispersing it into the surrounding area somehow. Actually, now that I thought about it, that might well have been what kept the Kadeshi death spark from killing me. I scooped up the soggy sheet of paper from the woman guard's hand and handed it to Maylene to look at.
This is a summoning rune. Touch it and it'll alert whoever's at the other end and give them a trace to follow. What do you want to bet that if I tap this with my finger, a whole swarm of elite will be along shortly?
Do you want to call this off?
She tore the sheet in half, breaking the rune, then dropped it.
No. If I walk away now, I'll be outlawed. I'll have to leave Zahn forever and surrender Marchand to my sister. If I can get through to her and challenge successfully, Thavik won't have any choice but to acknowledge my claim to the barony. He might try to have me declared outlaw anyway, but the other peers won't like that, and I'll have a damn good chance of fighting it off. But first, let's get these guys out of here.
After we'd removed the guards' bodies, so neither of them was going to keel over and drown in a puddle before they woke up, Maylene edged back to look out the end of the alley.
So now what do we do? It's not getting any earlier. We're still miles away from our goal, and I'm not seeing any way to make it up that hill. Not with the elite blocking the high road and the crown guard blocking the low road.
Actually, the guards are blocking the middle road.
You're not suggesting the sewers, are you? In the middle of a rainstorm? That's insane!
It is, which is exactly why I think we might be able to make it work. Only three sewer lines coming down off the Savan Hill are big enough to pass a person walking upright. In dry weather, I'd bet money on all of them being covered by the elite and the stone dogs. But with all this rain, No one sane is going into the sewers.
How do you know that much about the system?
Back when I was working out a plan to kill Ashvik, I had to learn enough about the basic layout of Tien's main sewers to know whether they were a good option or not. There have been miles and miles of the things built over the last 500 years.
Did you go in through the sewers then? I've never heard anyone talk about the details.
No, the sewers that lead to the palace are a nightmare for anyone trying to use them to get at the king. Full of dead ends and traps, many of Durkot design, plus all kinds of patrols and checkpoints.
Which is why Master Uriel and Pattis died down there. Nasty place.
All right, but the palace is on the other side of the river. Why would you know the ones over here so well?
Because we've been living over here, and that's what I was taught to do. But I really only know the mains. I'm sure there are at least another dozen lines coming down off the hill that would pass someone willing to crawl through sewage on their belly in the dark. Depending on how they're connected to the storm drains, one of them might well provide us a better and safer route. But I couldn't tell you where those were if my life depended on it.
Oh, how sad. Here I was thinking how much fun it would be to crawl through sewage on my belly, and now you've dashed my hopes. I guess we get to drown instead.
If you've got a better idea, I'm all for it.
It took us 2 miserable hours underground to travel the 5 short blocks I felt we needed to get past the cordon. We nearly drowned 6 times, but with ropes and magic and Triss's help, we did finally make it. The only positive things I can say about the trip were, 1, the rushing storm waters had cleared out the worst of the stench and all of the shit that wasn't permanently glued to the bricks, and 2, we didn't run into any of the restless dead, risen or otherwise. We came up out of the sewers in a narrow street lined with the walled homes of the lesser well-to-do. From there, we dragged ourselves into an even narrower alley, where we collapsed against some wealthy merchants or minor nobles' back wall. Unspeakable muck coated the bricks beneath us, but it couldn't be significantly worse than the unspeakable muck we'd had to wallow through to get here, so it probably all equaled out. Beside me, Maylene poked at her ruined clothes.
So much for going into the duel looking like the rightful Baroness.
Don't worry about it. We can always stop by your sister's rooms on the way in and steal you something more appropriate.
I wish we could, but someone might recognize the outfit. As much as I hate it, the manner of my defeat of Sumi is going to have almost as much to do with whether I can hold the barony successfully as the fact of the defeat itself. Which means we will have to do something about my clothes. I'm just not sure what or when yet. Maybe I can find something of my mother's at Marchand House, though that doesn't solve the immediate problem.
Before I could respond, an utterly soggy Bontrang dropped out of the sky and into Maylene's lap. When she scooped him up, he tucked his beak under her chin. The little fellow had practically gone berserk when Maylene insisted he stay above ground while we went into the sewers, but it was safer for both of them that way. Triss must have felt some of the same sympathy for Bontrang and Maylene that I did. He shifted into dragon shape and draped his head across my lap affectionately. I scratched him behind his invisible ears and wished we could just stay like that for the next 400 or 500 years. Unfortunately, that wasn't an option. I could already feel the warmth of exertion losing the fight to the cold and wet.
Maylene?
Yes?
Why don't you and Bontrang stay here while I hunt us up that change of clothes? I can do it quicker alone.
I stripped off my sodden woolen hood and vest and draped them over Maylene and Bontrang. It wasn't much, but it was all I had to offer. Maylene pulled them around her gratefully.
Thank you. Bontrang's freezing, and I'm starting to get cold, too.
Of course. I noticed the way he's shivering between the purrs. We all need to get dry and get moving, and that starts with clothes. You'll need something to carry Bontrang in, too. That bag's no good anymore.
I'm not, in general, a big fan of theft, though I'll do it when I absolutely have to. So I promised myself to leave a couple of Maylene's silver reels in the bottom of whatever petty noble's wardrobe I ended up raiding for our clothes. I also prefer not to scare the life out of anyone who hasn't earned it, which is why I intended to pick a wardrobe in an empty bedroom. Here on the lower slopes of the Sauvin Hill, people couldn't afford the extensive magical protections and alarms that I'd have found up closer to Marchand House. It was relatively simple to pick a large house that felt mostly empty, and use Triss and a bit of minor spell work to open the delivery door that led into the dark kitchen. From there, it was just a short jaunt up the servant stairs to the upper floors, where Triss found me an empty guest room. As was often the case in the smaller noble houses during spring, and the switchover from winter wardrobe to summer wardrobe, a guest room had been pressed into service for temporary storage. It held the winter clothes that had to be kept handy for a few more weeks yet, in case of cold snaps, as well as little sachets of fleabane and worry moth. As I dug around through the clothes spread across the bed, I found a moment to be thankful I was in Tien. Here, loose silks and cottons provided the outfit of choice for the upper class, a marked contrast to someplace like Aven, where everyone favored tailored wool and fitted leather and lots of boning and laces. It meant that I could manage with stuff that was more nearly my size, and also that if it worked for me, it'd probably work for Maylene. I did make sure to pick out women's clothes of the best fabrics for her, given that she might have to use them for the jewel. The divided skirts were fuller than the pants I nicked for myself, but only a little. After changing my own clothes, I wrapped up a bundle for Maylene, using the bed's top blanket as my sack. I was just finishing that up when Triss gave me a sharp poke in the ribs.
Alan.
I'd had him watching in the hall, and that was the signal that someone was out there now. I doused my thieves' light.
Sss, window. Now. It's the steward, and he's got an axe. I think he must have heard something.
That was when the door to the guest room burst open. Damn efficient servants, the bane of the housebreaker's existence. I'd intended to at least open the window first, but I didn't have the time, so I just put Maylene's bundle of clothes in front of my face and crashed right through the shutters. With Triss providing a shroud of darkness to hide me, I knew the man would never be able to spot or follow me.
Watch! Watchman, over here! A thief escapes!
On the other hand, the watch may present a problem in fairly short order. The window was on the front side of the house, and Maylene was out back and a few houses down. So I doubled back around. When I vaulted over the back wall, I found Maylene already waiting for me, with Bondrang glaring angrily on her shoulder.
What the hell went wrong?
I picked the only house in the neighborhood where they pay the servants well enough to care, apparently. Now come on, we have to get out of here.
Normally, I wouldn't have been that fussed about it. Put a couple of blocks between us and the break-in, and we'd be set. But normally the neighborhood wasn't crawling with crowned guards, and... stone dogs. Maylene threw herself down on the muddy ground and rolled under the low canopy of a golden willow, following Bontrang into the natural tent. I entered more cautiously, duck-walking to preserve the knees of my stolen pants. They were already the worst for 20 minutes of climbing walls and running through backyards with the forces of the crown in howling pursuit. We'd shaken them loose somewhere on the outskirts of the royal preserve by slipping in and out across the borders between crown land and various private estates. Our current hiding place lay on a tiny island centering the miniature man-made lake on the Earl of Anarion's city estate, a spot I'd scouted for just such a temporary refuge years ago when I was nosing Marchand House as a venue for killing Ashvik. Luckily, nothing seemed to have changed since then. We'd been able to follow a narrow, calf-deep track built for the use of the gardeners and concealed among the lily pads out to the island. I'd brought us to the island because we needed to hole up for an hour or two, and the shelter of the willow was perfect for the purpose. Not even crack troops like the elite and crown guard can maintain maximum alertness for very long without dulling their edge. Our chances of getting in clear to the not-so-far-off Marchand House would be much better if we vanished for a bit before making our next move. It also gave Maylene a chance to finally change into clean, dry clothes.
Sorry about all the running and hiding. I really didn't expect to get pinched by an elderly steward for stealing clothes.
I handed them over.
You want me to hold anything for you?
I bet you say that to all the girls when you're trying to get them out of their clothes. Here, take Bontrang. He's half frozen. Oh, and you'd actually better hang on to the clothes, too. I can't strip and keep them off the ground at the same time.
I took the little griffinx and stuffed him into the front of my shirt against my skin. He was cold and wet and smelled of soggy cat, and was very, very happy to be out of the elements. Triss, who had come to quite like the little fellow, wrapped himself protectively around the griffinx as I rubbed his neck. Meanwhile, Maylene skinned out of her ruined shirt and pants, leaving me wishing for better light. She was a beautiful woman, and we hadn't gotten another chance to be alone together since the keep fire. Hayen had gone out of his way to prevent us. I couldn't fault him for that, however much it might have frustrated me. Protecting Maylene was his job.
Hand me that shirt. Skirt next. Much better. Now, what's our next move?
You stay right here for at least an hour. We've still got 4 hours till daybreak, and we need to let the heat die down a bit.
Well, damn.
What?
If we've got an hour to kill in here, and we want to have any hope of staying warm and limber while we do it, I'm going to end up taking these clothes right off again.
You better let me hold Bon Trang since he's still half frozen and we can keep watch. Humans would be so much easier to deal with if they had mating seasons like everybody else.